how we are the last and most important generation for the foreseeable amount of time in the future.
Probably.
Because we are the only ones that know the before time. It's going to be before time and after time.
Oh, is that the name? The before time?
The before time, dog. The before time. So we're going to have to, like, we're going to be like oracles and shit. And like, what happened in the before time?
Yeah, you know.
Niggas said- would watch TV and not know what was coming on next. Like,
doing that and having books around and shit.
There were paper books you would read with your eyes before they put it in your irises beforehand. Oh. Yo, it's going to be important, dog. I'm scared.
Send the link.
Welcome to Send a Link, where we analyze the latest feeds and reads. I'm Brandon Harrison with my co-captain, co-pilot, and co-New Yorker. It's New York DJ. How does it feel to live in the greatest city in the world? Specifically, the greatest borough in the world.
Ah, yes. Feels normal in a good way.
Yeah.
I guess. We
just,
here.
This is just this shit day to day. This is just how it is.
That's how it is, B. Throw midges off of buses or whatever, as we've just seen.
Pizza rat. People on heroin nodding off.
Stop and frisk. Universal pre-K.
Birthplace of hip-hop.
A bunch of shit.
Bum stink? Yeah, just wafting bum stink.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
I know city juice is a thing. You know city juice.
Yeah, it's on the top of the seat in the subway, just marinating.
City, well, that's seat juice. That's bus juice. I'm talking about city juice. The usually maybe either after the snow melts,
okay,
or after no, snow melting definitely, but yes. After a garbage day,
mm-hmm,
that puddle that
yes.
You sometimes when the pavement is uneven, mm-hmm, so it can cause certain puddling to happen.
Yeah, primordial soup.
Yes, and it usually is of a yellowish tinge, and has the light notes of citrus.
And citrus.
Then urine. Yeah, oh. Kind of
pleasant.
No, not pleasant.
Like Pine Sol.
The worst Pine Sol ever. What a tangent.
And this is how Rudy Giuliani was born. He just. Hand came up.
What would imagine something like that? That should sound like what Ninja Turtles, right? Isn't that the plot of Ninja Turtles?
In the sewer.
Yeah, they were just in the sewer water, and then
just got mad brolic.
Damn, where have I been? Maybe I should start doing that shit. Shit, the water in my sink becoming out brown nowadays. Maybe I should start drinking up.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I gotta tell the super.
The reason why I asked you about your affinity for this great city, actually. I just met with someone and they were visiting and they were like, oh my God, I'm so overwhelmed by everything that happens here. And I'm glad that, it ain't nothing to just
nothing.
to be part of this.
It's not nothing.
So listeners, if you're tired of us, bloviating on how great we are, that's part of living in New York City. And with that, there's also some of the, a darker side, the seedier side, or a more, an ephemera of the New York specific phenomenons that happen
that we all experience or see individually, but are one and the same.
Yeah, we know about it. You might know about it too if you're from here. But is it something we talk about? Is it something that we participate in? Or is it just a meme that exists for all of us here?
Yeah.
With that. Sam Kestenbaum, Mr. Sam Kestenbaum, decided to tackle one of the, I guess, most mysterious and best marketed parts of
the best guerrilla marketing by far. I don't know how it's able to reach so many different lines and so many trains.
You bet it. We're going local. We're going local, y'all, on our piece.
We're digging in.
Kino is New York's most famous and mysterious subway psychic. I found her. Shout out to the editor for that headline. It's all there.
Smooth.
Very, very well done. DJ, can you school those who may not be aware what exactly Kino and Kino's marketing scheme are?
Sure. So are we going with Kino or Keanu? I don't know how smooth it is.
I I in the piece, it's actually phonetically pronounced.
Ah, you're right.
It is. So I am 90% sure I'm wrong, that it is Keanu.
Okay, right.
Thank you for bringing attention to
that. Okay, valid. Because I don't want to disrespect Keanu and her and her psychic powers.
I do.
But if you are one of the millions of us that take the MTA every day, particularly the subway, on just about every line, especially if you frequent the train, and if you commute to work and back, every so often, if you look up at all of the various advertisements, and you'll see a lot of ads for what's popping nowadays, Seamless, like food delivery apps,
Casper mattresses,
Street Easy, I was about to say Street Easy, like, you know, apartment finding.
Is your perfect place between the top floor and the bottom floor?
Whatever. Yeah, all this the snarky, you know, Web 3.0 marketing. Are you on drugs? If you're on drugs, you know, call this number.
AIDS is okay.
I was about to say like, just the prep mails.
It's like yeah, you won't get it. I'm like, what is this shit?
prep ads. Shout out to Frank Ocean.
I get it. You know, I mean, still
if you
be safe.
If you're an immigrant, if come get your city ID. I know that's popping out. A lot of those ads in Spanish.
Yes, in English and in Espanol. Yes. I've seen many of those.
See something, say something ads.
Mm-hmm.
I particularly like the one with the lady. You know, like she's like feeling a heart. She's like having a heart attack sitting down.
You see her, say something.
Yeah, like because this,
you all right?
Cause this bitch is dying. Like,
you dead,
bitch? Right, but those ads tend to be, you know, relatively like physically large. But what you'll... What attracts your attention oftentimes actually this relatively small, what would you call it, like 5x3 inch?
Something. Damn, we get into specifics of printing here.
Because this is all about printing.
It's a what do they call it? A portrait shaped
small flyer that is usually manually stuck up on the ad bar. Advertising with a triangle with an eyeball in it, obviously
all seeing eye,
giving off this thing. You know, psychic Illuminati mysterious vibe with an advertisement for Keanu the psychic. Usually, everybody just looks at it in passing. We all recognize it. It's become a meme through the social media. And it's always persistent. One would think that somebody would go through their, you know, guerrilla ad campaign, send out the goons to put these ads up all over the train. One good time, they get good coverage, and you know that was their push. They had whatever marketing budget. I don't know what printing place is like kept in business by Keanu right now, but somewhere out there, then Southwest Brooklyn is really living it up off these Keanu checks. Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, living up with these Keanu checks. But in this case, how often do you see these Keanu ads?
It's funny. I feel like I saw them not as recently.
I saw one. I should have taken a fucking picture. I saw one literally, I think, like 2 days ago.
I don't know if it's specifically. Are they like trains that travel specifically through Southwest Brooklyn? You know, the yellow lines and the orange is more so.
Yeah, it might be why. Yeah.
But... They're pretty prominent. I mean, I've seen them about, and I just assumed it was like anything in New York, some bullshit that somebody was just doing.
Yeah.
Like a mixtape or whatever. It doesn't matter.
Right. But I've always actually been pleasantly surprised that you would see them so persistently. Like somebody's really out there on their grind putting up these ads, because they're not just on the yellow line, although probably most prominently. You see it all over the city to the point where, as we were saying, with this kind of New York ephemera, where if we show the ad to just about anyone, any like normal person in the city, I bet my bottom dollar that the vast majority of them would recognize it. And be like, yeah, I saw it on the train. They're not gonna know exactly what it is, but we all have seen Keanu's all seeing eye, and it looks like one intrepid reporter from the Times sought her out.
Well, well said, DJ.
I try to throw it together. I'm trying to be
like, we have a nice breadth of understanding now. What's funny about the reporting is that it's first person, so it gives you this story of not only his pursuit of Keanu, but also the history of this sort of space in, I don't call it the business world, but the psychic storefront person and history of the law surrounding it and how it's been a part of, I mean, communities for a long time. Mm-hmm. And we've all seen these places, you know, and you're like, oh, this is some bullshit, whatever, blah, blah, blah. You walk by it, but as is alluded to in the piece, it doesn't take that much to maintain the overhead for a psychic place if you just get a couple of marks every couple months or so.
A couple of wealthy marks, or in a more positive sense, people that just want to have their be more in tune with the
right.
the dark arts and magics. And
is that part of it too? You can gain. You know,
well, no, I mean, I'm just saying, like, have your future
imbue your powers and shit.
You know, you just want to see what your aura is feeling like for the day. You need that positive reinforcement that your future looks good. How all of these things go, but they go into detail in it, right?
Yeah. My favorite thing though about this, regardless of if we're talking about the history or, you know, what it means to market something that in New York is pretty much everything is just bullshit ads and everything. Yeah. But the back and forth or the interplay between Sam and his pursuit of Keanu up until actually finding her. So it took a number of months when he called and spoke to someone and then the person just frittered away and hung up, a raspy voiced person. And then he returned and found an address on a new flyer. Initial flyers had no address, and the new flyers had addresses, yeah. And he met, you know, I guess, disciples of Keanu, these three women who were at the place that would do readings but were not Keanu, yeah. And then from there would return and would wait and would see if someone's going to be there, she's going to be there. Still no Keanu, to the point where eventually one day he goes, sees this throne outside of yeah. this shop in Bay Ridge and asks, you know, does anyone know Keanu? And she says, she's Keanu.
Mm.
And then from there, they have a lovely financially quid pro quo, that's hot,
yeah.
based relationship about
<Tell me. laughs>
him finding information about her versus her giving some readings.
Right, readings.
For a certain financial incentive.
Yeah, so it's definitely much more of a business transaction than it's you know marketed as, or what Keanu would have you a prospective customer believe up until the point where the writer proceeds to not give any money. There's no more readings.
It's end of the story.
Yeah, it's like the end of the story. I think the nicheness of it and just the ubiquity of the fire kind of really drew our attention to it most, because we all see these type of things, but don't delve into them. So I'm wondering if there are more, I'm sure there are more, but just various bits of New York ephemera that exist, that, have not been, totally explored, especially by mainstream outlets like the New York Times.
Rubbing my chin here, DJ. I would surmise that there probably are something. I'm trying to think about that now.
I mean, I definitely remember the what was it? The S&M house next door that was in Bed-Stuy. That was the thing. I think we may have talked about that.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
A while back. That was from last year. It got coverage in a number of outlets, including the New York Times. So I'm sure like that was funny. They didn't have a massive marketing ad campaign like Keanu does. But yeah, it doesn't even have to necessarily even be dark or salacious, but just the things that actually build up the backbone of the city, like they actually add to the culture. Like we all just know this ad. And I'm wondering how many pieces of paper that they've actually printed this out on, and who's giving, who's putting it up.
And to conclude about the actual story, they are passing out these flyers. They're taking these flyers from her, and she, upon meeting him, was around doing work, supposedly, to different states that she returns, and
right.
they print these flyers and take them on the subway.
Yeah.
And it's just part of the process, and I guess they get enough, I don't know, flow from that.
Right. I mean, the conceit of modern advertising is the actual people that you get is like a fraction of a fraction oftentimes. So you just have to cast a massive net. And there's few better nets in New York City than the subway. So it just makes sense for them.
It really is the great equalizer, especially with an advertisement on the subway.
Yes. So it makes sense for her and that type of industry to be so dependent on pretty much just a couple of wealthy marks. And if there's one, you know, for better or worse, you know, socializing institution and structure in the city, it is MTA, because all kind of everyone rides it. In a kind of corny way, I've always appreciated, excuse me, when I get on the train and you put your hand on the pole, like you're seeing all different types of hands on the pole. Sweaty ones too, so sometimes you gotta wash your hands. But
wow, you really, are you like brainstorming art pieces? It's like hands grabbing a subway pole.
That's definitely some I don't know, some corny, like
coming here with the wild painting and smock on
hands on pole, some innuendo shit. But yeah, that's just one visual that I've paid attention to too often. And then when we all look up into that corner, all those people with different backgrounds and different occupations and income levels and cultural backgrounds, we see that Keanu ad. So it's not just that New York Times writer that followed up on that. There are some people that are looking, searching for something in a certain, fog in their life at the time. And they want a reading. They want to try to find clarity and want another future. And it's not a coincidence that services like that have existed, and Keanu has a storefront in New York City where storefronts are, you know, evaporating with the quickness, albeit even in Bay Ridge. It's it's working in one way or another. That's all I can say.
I mean, it's funny. I mean, I was thinking about therapy the other day, and the idea that therapy exists because no one cares about anyone. It's like, all right, no one's really going to listen to you.
But I'll listen to you if you pay me.
If you pay me, I'll listen to you. That's basically it. So, I mean, how different is this? Obviously, there's no standards and or practices pertaining to how this should be conducted.
There's no journal.
There's no, the DSM, standard DSM. It doesn't exist for psychics, but I guess the sentiment is the same.
Yeah, and there's some good in that. There's some functionality in that.
Is that a bow on it?
Maybe.
Because in my head, I was thinking about someone else, so maybe potentially delusional, needed someone to talk to.
Like who?
Carmelo Anthony.
You maybe Melo go to Keanu.
Melo.
Keanu's like, I don't see basketball in your future.
Oh shit! Is Keanu Melo?
I guess we never really found out exactly who it was.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she said that she was Keanu, but really.
You never know. Maybe we're all Keanu.
In our hearts.
This is like some QAnon shit. Some New York QAnon. This is making everything abstract. But, I mean, he's trying to change the future, right? He's back in the league. Melo's starting tonight.
As he deserves. Timestamp. Boom.
What's today?
Today is Tuesday, November 19th. And I would want to say that it's been over a year since Carmelo Anthony has played basketball.
How many games did he play for the Rockets last season?
I'm not sure at all. I want to say 10 to 9.
Yeah, it was a small sample size, yeah.
And I want to say I saw one of his last good games ever. He played the Brooklyn Nets.
Oh, yeah.
And went off for 28.
Oh, smooth.
Yeah, without James Harden. He did this dang thing. And that was the last moment I saw him. And then again, as the saga continues, I saw him at Dwayne Wade's last game when he grabbed the ball and shit, when he came on the stands. I was like, damn, What happened? The downfall.
Right.
As he became a meme, then we had the whole summer of people talking about him, him on ESPN, basically begging to be back in the league. And at first, people wanted to say some of those things like, oh, well, you know, you just like the Iverson situation or these other guys that don't know how to shift. But as the more I think about it, it really feels like some fucked up blackballing type shit in my estimation. Wow.
Go ahead, tell me, Mr. Barbershop.
Well, yeah, to put my cape on in the barbershop chair, it feels like there would be a place if someone let there be a place for him, because people will talk about any player's downfalls, but they all are, they're not all superstars, especially considering some of the guys that, like Vince Carter's still in the league, and you can't tell me his chemist rating is still that high for a team that literally doesn't need a chemist because they're ass.
For the Hawks, right?
Yeah.
Well,
Tony Parker played last year. Yes. Like, shit like... he's not a chemist.
I think a lot of these things are contextual, right? So, Parker played for the Charlotte Hornets. Am I correct?
Yeah, you are right.
Okay. So, to be clear, Carmelo Anthony, after an unsuccessful stint in with the Houston Rockets at the beginning of the last NBA season.
And can I interrupt you briefly? I feel like that specifically, that falling out from the Rockets was this bullshit thing, as opposed to maybe teams not feeling the need to pick him up for something.
Well, yeah, I think that's what I'm trying to speak to the context, but I just wanted to give just the basic, you know, background details, because he hasn't been in the league for going on a year now, right? But was just signed by the ailing Portland Trail Blazers, a team that I picked that I thought would have a successful NBA season. The jury's still out. It's very early. They have a number of hurt players in the front court and back court. So they find themselves to be in a relative rut as of now and need more
firepower.
I don't even know if they need more firepower, because they can score. They really needed just, I don't know, more size and defense. But they're not going to get much of that for Melo, but they decided to sign Carmelo Anthony.
Front court skill play.
Sure. To the Portland Trail Blazers. So that those are the facts on the ground. Now, Brandon has pitched a reasonable, a measured... it's not even a conspiracy theory. It's just a blunt takeaway from the circumstances in which Melo found himself outside of the NBA.
Exactly.
But I think you are not generous to the fact that, for one, Carmelo Anthony clearly did not want to play for a trash team. He's not in his head lightly.
That's true.
And for two, he's... reprehensible on defense, just like a zero on defense.
I feel like that's overstated, and I don't, and I think he is ass on defense. I agree with that, but I think there's this thing like, you know, he's getting cooked, where it's like, nigga, we play in a league where,
but it's just
like word of mouth shit.
That is joined with the context though, because it wouldn't matter if he was going the Vince Carter route and just played on the Hawks. He's trying to play on a contending team and getting PT, as in playing time, for those of you that never hooped before. So if that's the case, then there has to be more of a compromise in the middle. You want to play for a contending team and score, but you don't want to play defense. You don't want to lessen your role.
You
don't want to be the center.
You know what it is, though? And this kind of speaks to the piece, Kirk Goldsberry.
I'm not arguing that in absolutes, part of the context.
That's not the point I'm trying to make. I just wanted to talk about the piece, just that it exists. It's from the archives of December 2016,
yes,
about Carmelo Anthony being the last American ball hog. I think, like we've talked about off pod, about Kyrie Irving and how it's not making the Nets work and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of it is nerd backlash.
Okay.
And they just don't. He doesn't fit, you know, Chase and Brigari, and I don't know, we can really find a place for him. And it's like, sure, the team limiting factor of like, well, are we trying to win, or what's going to happen with that? You can't tell me that a team on their very end of their bench would it need someone like that versus a lot of the players that they do keep around? Like, specifically for the Rockets last year, every time I think about how they lost, mm-hmm. and it wasn't because their defense was terrible. It was because they were predictable as a team offensively. And to that point, at a certain point in the playoffs, you just need, if I was going to pass the ball around, this is very basketball specific, guys. Mm-hmm. But if I was going to pass the ball around the perimeter, as the Rockets offense is, you just pass it around and hope that one of them shoots a three off of penetration or pick and roll. Mm-hmm. One of them would have to take a dribble eventually or do something to throw off the predictability of it.
Like the defense move.
Yeah. And none of them, PJ Tucker's not going to do that. None of the rest of those bums are going to do that. But Carmelo Anthony would. Just to have the option.
Okay.
And you can't, for teams that are talking about guys 15 through 11, these niggas don't matter.
11 through 15.
Yes.
Okay. I was just making it make sense in my mind.
No, it's all good.
I don't contend with any of that. I'm happy that he found a spot on the roster. It's just a matter of what type of role was and is he willing to take. You know, he's coming in as a kind of white knight for the Blazers right now. They need the punch. Dame Lillard is not starting tonight. Carmelo Anthony went from out of the league to starting tonight. So
yeah, he's going for a strong 22, first game back.
I wouldn't be surprised. He's going to get the ball a lot. He's going to be jazzed up. He's going to want to have a good performance. Nobody doubts those aspects of his game. As I've gotten older now and I watch, you know, a lot of NBA basketball, it's all of these guys are supremely talented. Now, age and athleticism, they matter a lot. But it's about how it plays out over the entire course of a game and a season and a playoffs, right, that really matter the most. Because there are a lot of guys that can score a lot of points. Not necessarily in the fame fashion as Melo, who is a Hall of Fame player and a multi-time, you know, All-Star and Olympian and all that type of stuff. But what are the pros and cons of that when you're management or when you're, you know, leading a team and you're trying to establish certain roles in the team? Dwight Howard it appears as if he's had his humbling over the past few seasons, where just persistently, for one, everybody in the NBA hated him for whatever reasons. I see that he just, I guess, made peace with Kobe today or
yeah, past few days. Him and LeBron are like doing that thing where they do handshakes and they like laugh.
Right. Yeah. So it's all shits and giggles now. But that's also because he has probably by brute force had to humble himself in order to have a viable role still within the NBA. Dwight Howard was a top player. I think he won MVP, right? Didn't he win MVP?
Nah.
He won Defensive Player of the Year multiple times, you know, also player.
MVP arguably finalist.
Right. So arguably Hall of Fame player, so on and so forth. So it can be done. And Dwight Howard is on a very good team. But it appears to me, just from the outside, from just being somebody that watches shit a lot, because I'm not, you know, a professional analyst or ex-player, but it goes with the mentality that you're bringing in when you're joining a team. Because
it's fair.
Yeah, because these type of players, the teams are not coming to them, right? If you're Melo, there weren't many teams at his front door trying to sign him, nor was it really for Dwight Howard. So you're going somewhere. So you have to be on your best behavior and fit in, not fit out.
Can you let me get my nerd bashing?
Did you fuck with the fit out? Remember the fit out?
K-Love thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the petty LeBron subliminal thing. Like, fit out. I was like, that shit was just so corny.
I mean, my thing is that
nerd bashing.
I agree with all those points, but my nerd bashing issue is that I listen to a lot of athletes talk about shit recently just for things that have to do with work. And one of my biggest pet peeves is the way management treats or talks to them about the way the plans for the team and this whole asset thing and the value thing. And I think between management and coaching, there is a fear or like a lack of communication that these guys have where they're afraid that like Carmelo's going to ruin their team or something like that. Or like, well, he thinks he's so great, so sit this nigga on the bench. Like, it's just like, this is like idea that, like,
I mean,
I feel like there's this, like, would this happen with Miami? They talk about Miami, oh, the culture there. Like, you, sometimes you have to establish that this is the way things are going to be done. So, I feel like for a lot of the stops, there's this thing where people are so concerned about fit, where they're devaluing their own culture, their team, by refusing to, oh, we don't want to take on this guy because of this. It's like he's not a murderer. It's like stuff like people that are like actual problems. Like, no, like, we need you to do this, do it,
right,
or don't do it and don't play. Or, you know, so if I'm a team like the Rockets or a team like the Blazers or a team like the Nets or like, what, you can't tell me that Wilson Chandler is going to, like, the idea that the risk reward for you to try to get a Hall of Fame player who can still, because every team that wins a championship, and I say this, this is me getting my analyst thing, has a breadth of skilled bench players that they got for cheap. It's like, oh, you know, this guy's a Hall of Fame player. He just wants to be on the team. Like the Warriors, when they were smacking everybody, it's like, oh, Sean Livingston was a number 3 pick and his knee fell apart. But now he could just be the best backup point guard in the league. Yeah. David West is getting paid $3 to be a former All-Star hitting middies all the time.
Yeah.
That's the Mavericks, when they beat the Heat that time. They had everybody on the bench was a former All-Star.
Right, yeah.
And that's how every championship team is built. Because if you risk building a team, you have to get talent on the margins. An idea that some kid that weighs 20 pounds, is 18 years old, is going to help this team, or somebody that was never a solid NBA player, oh, you know, he's great in the locker room, dog. Let somebody else be great in the locker room. There's, you got to jump out there. And I just always find it to be a reticent cultural thing where they don't want to be challenged by these players that are good, or coaches that don't want to be challenged by players that may have perspective. Mm-hmm. You can't tell me Dwight Howard is actually still good.
Yeah.
Like Melo, you could say he's slow, but whatever. Dwight Howard was still putting up numbers. He hurt his back 1 year.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, Dwight Howard is done. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. So I think I and a lot of people can be just subject to media narratives.
Media.
And there's validity to them. But, you know, when it comes down to brass tacks and the reality of the situation, do you want, like, what type of player do you really want on the team? Now, that this, There are very varied levels to risk assessment and looking at a particular player and seeing and projecting how they would fit in with the culture of the team. To be clear, I think what you're saying is a lot of teams are probably too reticent from the onset when looking at a potential player like a Melo that. They're just too reticent.
Yeah, to be risk averse for what? Like, what it, right. You lost out on a G League prospect that is not, he's going to be, he would have been a solid third point guard. Whoops. Okay.
Right, but if you're, I think his type of market as a player, it stretches out, it thins out. Because most likely, you're only going to get two types of teams. You're going to get teams on the cusp and or contenders, and you're going to get trash teams that just could put your name up on the marquee in the front. Any middling team that's trying to develop or what have you, if you're someone that has a media narrative following you, if you have the media narrative following you like a Melo, what is a team like, I don't know, Phoenix or Minnesota Timberwolves like? Why would they sign him? Do you get what I'm saying?
I mean, Blazers picked them up, but Phoenix is like, yo, they're actually trying to like be scrappy.
They're trying to be scrappy, but
and if Melo will be willing,
but that too. So that's why it's the context is with the player and with these various orgs. The Blazers find themselves as runners up in the Western Conference last year, got swept by the Warriors. They were expected and are still expected to be good this season. Damn near on the cusp of, you know, contending or being right there. I still, if everything breaks positively for them,
always been asked to me.
I'm still on the bandwagon, in Dame we trust. So they can look at it as that type of proposition. They do have good leadership. They do have great coaching. They do have organizational stability. So yeah, why not for them? But for some teams, I think it is more plausible for them to be leery of entering this type of situation.
That's fair. Well, can we move on to this idea of now? We know what Melo is, this idea of this isolation score. Does he fit into the modern day? But now he's on the Blazers.
He's on the Blazers.
What do you, are we, is this going to be anything that is good for him? Or what does it say about any other future guys that people will be like ready to write off, like as wash, like DeAndre Jordan?
But DeAndre Jordan is either apparently just lacking or just actually washed. So that's a bit different. And he doesn't have his skills were dependent on, one, motivation, and two, athleticism. So I don't know how that will bear out over the next few games and seasons. Melo has just a preternatural offensive game, so he could always score in the isolation type of thing. So he could always just be laid out there like a Claymore and, you know, go off a bit, put up a few points, sell a few jerseys, you know, that whole nine. But do I find him to be enough of a dynamic player to really change the fortunes of the Blazers right now? No, not really.
Of course not.
Could he swing a game or two in the playoffs? Absolutely. So that's also why, on your side, it's good to bring in players like that, especially with that type of
you
want to
have. You know, in the Matrix or what is it, those other movies, and you go into the back room and your shit goes, shit, all the guns come out, and you see the gun closet.
Yeah, that was Matrix. Yeah.
You want to have the big ratchets back there? You want to have pea shooters and shit?
Right. I don't even know what type of gun Carmelo would be, but we'll come back to that. But if things break well, the Blazers get healthy, they'll be right there. I mean, every team in the Western Conference is basically one injury away from either contending or not. So that's kind of just how I feel about it. They have one more positive offensive player that could take the pressure off of their two main scorers in CJ McCollum and Dame Lillard, obviously. So that can only be a positive for them in the dog days in the middle of the season. That is just far too long. I'm only saying that just to troll you because I know you're not.
Live update. 6-5. Portland's up. 1-3 from Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, of course he shot it.
You know that's going to be a highlight. People probably cheered. I need to see it.
And you know how he shot it, too. He was fucking triple threat.
Did he hit the shot of the head? Yeah, baby. Feels good.
You hype. Hopefully.
This is for New York, all right?
I was about to say Knicks again. Knicks fans are just like transplanted.
This is the real championship. Right.
Because the shit is looking dark over there in Manhattan, boy.
Pretty dire.
You know. So, what's his name? Fizdale. Going to find himself an assistant coach. Bitch again somewhere, just randomly getting picked up. Probably like on a Clippers. You ever notice the Clippers have like every single washed out coach?
Ballmer just out here like, yo, I got the bag. You need somewhere to be? Just come hang out with me on the bench. Doc will got you.
Same.
It's crazy. So my last note though, the DeAndre Jordan thing was like a joke, but I feel like I don't want to see this every year. This like star former player having to do this tour of redemption.
It's tough, man.
Because even with Dwight and Melo, we joked about Vince Carter, but these are Hall of Fame. It's not just a good player trying to find somewhere to be. Like, people are talking about Jamal Crawford. Like, oh, Jamal Crawford. Like, Jamal Crawford is not this type of guy. Mm-hmm. This is an elite, absurdly elite talent. I would hope that across sports, like, look at Adrian Peterson out here smashing his head in but still running over people. Like, these guys can still play, and I don't want it to be this cultural banishment beyond like their actual talents. It's depressing. Dwight Howard is still mad good, younger than LeBron.
Yeah, relatively speaking, mad good is a subjective term, but he's a player.
Look it up, the definition of mad good.
Mad good. He's effective, yeah, for sure.
That's my hope, and I hope that Melo is successful as Dwight has been successful. Therefore, I don't have to see, I don't know. I do not want to see Russell Westbrook suffering this in 3 years.
This always happens.
Chris Paul is languishing right now. He's still good.
This always happens, though. I don't know why you're being naive about this.
It's not that it always happens. It's that there was a different level of sort of respect for these guys where the media is gone. It's just like, Melo's ass. It's just like, that didn't, like, you would just fade out. You would have, you know, Hakeem on the Raptors and, but it was just like, just let them waste away. It wasn't like this thing where you don't even belong in the league. And there was, those are big giants too. They were not like, you know, guys that they're plotters. So that's just the media portion of it is what has me frustrated. But yeah, it'll be all right.
It'll be okay.
RIP Russ 2023. Hurting. I'm thinking about Russell in 2023 already. I'm not ready.
He's still gonna be out here running up and down the court. Sure.
Okay. So with that discussion about washness 2023, I mean, it's coming to my future being washed. I'm already prepared for it mentally. It's a lot to deal with.
Early onset washness.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. My cycle is set to full rinse. Mm. DJ, have you been aware of this trend that the young people are doing? Because I don't keep up with them.
The Zoomers?
Yeah, the Zoomers. Mm-hmm. Generation Zion.
Yeah.
Just down there dancing in the underground shit.
Naked. Half orgy thing. World's coming to an end.
Yeah. Apparently, they're admonishing the older people amongst us with a phrase, turn of phrase?
Gasp.
Okay, boomer? Sardonically, supposedly said. I've only read it. I've never heard it. But I'd imagine it sounds like okay, boomer.
I think, obviously, the vast majority of our culture wars have migrated onto the internet and social media. So,
has anybody said anything out loud?
That's what I'm saying. Like, everybody just... It's actually just a Zoomer next to his grandfather, whatever the fuck, like cursing him out, but on Facebook.
Not saying shit to him, yeah. Just looking at him like, fuck you, grandpa.
Exactly. Okay, boomer, and on there. So I guess it's like, okay, boomer.
Apparently this was birthed on a Generation Z app?
Weapon?
Weapon? TikTok? where the culture wars have gone officially viral with the memification of this phrase. Taylor Lorenz and at the Times has okay boomer marks the end of friendly generational relations. So currently, do you know the generations, DJ?
That are still alive?
That are currently under 100.
Okay. Is greatest still alive?
No.
Okay.
They fought World War II, though. Shout outs.
How about Silent?
Shut up.
That's before Greatest, right?
No, I think Silent. I think Silent is the...
What the fuck happened? Why were they Silent? Was that like the Dust Bowl or whatever?
No, is Silent before Greatest?
Yeah, it was.
Then what's after Greatest?
Baby Boomers.
No, right?
What's after what? What's after Greatest? You said what's after Greatest?
Yeah.
Isn't it Baby Boomers?
No.
No?
Because in between that, the Greatest fought World War II. Yeah. Baby Boomers didn't come till like 60s.
Yes.
So who's in between?
Who the fuck cares?
They're trash, though.
They're trash. they, the whatever gen. Maybe the Greatest Generation was like a large cohort. I don't know. You could look that up. But yeah, then you have Baby Boomers and you have Generation X, right? Mm-hmm. Gen Xers. And then you have Millennials.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the Zoomers.
You're correct, though. It is Greatest Generation, then the Silent Generation.
Okay.
Then Baby Boomers, then the Xers, then us, Millennials, and now the Generation Z.
We need to go to wherever these rooms are where people are, like, branding these names. Because Millennials is fire. I hold that. But where the fuck did Greatest Generation come from? They were just hype over World War II in the U.S.? Just
like, over the greatest. 1901, 1927. Greatest.
Sure.
Silence. You know why they call them the Silence, though?
Because movies?
We obviously forgot about them.
Silent movies?
But 1925 to 1942, because they didn't really, most of them didn't fight World War II. And then they fought all those fucked up wars, Korean and Vietnam and shit, and just kind of got like shit on.
Yeah. Just got like muted out of history and shit.
Basically.
Then just got glossed over in terms of American exceptionalism.
Pretty much. And then we obviously had the boomers, known for their parents fucking. And Gen X, that's fire. That's
well, I mean, they weren't fire.
And they had, I mean, they had a whole wrestling shit named after them.
Oh, cohort. But D-Gen X?
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Suck it.
You know, they gave you D-Generation X, gave you grunge music, gave you, I guess, hip-hop, right?
Hip-hop, somewhat,
you know,
yeah.
Just, you know, they did their thing. Anything.
Somewhat. I mean, there wasn't a lot of social movement at the time.
Then?
Well, they were legislative.
Yeah, millennials is okay. Generation Z, I don't know.
Did they fucked? I don't know.
But just in terms of the name, I
like Zoomers, though. Zoomers is hard.
Zoomers hits.
I was a little envious, so they're going to hold on to that.
Because it calls back to boomers.
It does.
But it gives you the future after X, calls back to Generation X with Z.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the way around. I'm feeling it.
But I don't know about them because they came in while we didn't understand this tech shit. So now they're all like addicted and disoriented and shit. It's fucked up.
I mean, DJ, can I tell you my theory about this whole generational thing?
Yeah, and then loop us back into
because,
this.
Okay, because of where we are in the space as millennials, we... And I feel like we're going to have to do it. I want to write a book. Feel free to join me. Mm-hmm. This is going to be like the seminal, I want to call it sci-fi, but young fantasy novel that pops off.
YA.
YA, thank you. About how we are the last and most important generation for the foreseeable amount of time in the future.
Probably.
Because we are the only ones that know the before time. It's going to be before time and after time.
Ooh, is that the name? The before time.
The before time, dog. The before time. So we're going to have to like... Or gonna be like oracles and shit. And like, what happened in the before time?
Yeah, you know,
niggas would watch TV and not know what was coming on next. Oh, like
doing that and having books around and shit.
There were paper books you would read with your eyes before they put it in your irises beforehand. Oh. Yo, it's gonna be important, dog. I'm scared. Like, my siblings don't know shit about, like, they have everything and don't understand anything.
Have everything but nothing.
Yes, it's crazy. It's crazy. So we are the brokers. We're the brokers of all knowledge.
Damn.
That shall ever exist before in the future age of disknowledge.
Mm. That was a strong term right there.
Yeah, yeah.
Disknowledge.
Disknowledge. I got an English degree. I do what I want. I was going to go with disinformation, but it didn't feel as powerful.
Right, right.
Disknowledge.
Right. Disknowledge.
Because you think you know,
but you don't.
You don't know shit.
Yeah. Boom.
And being at this, I guess, crux of the situation, it's funny being on, I don't know, the center of this trend, which I'm glad is finally hitting its right age demographics, because for the past 5 years or so, there's been like boomers hate millennials. But it was like, aren't you talking things in high school?
Yeah. Like, it's like, I don't even know these things.
I don't know what's happening. You're talking about this. I'm a grown ass man. I don't eat Tide Pods.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Millennials are getting out of control. It's like, bro, like I'm almost 30.
Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I think they're at least the media and obviously the large cohort that controls and works in that. Obviously, I'm still on the upper echelons of millennial age groups and boomers.
Right.
So then now they're like, oh, you know what? No, that's not. They're not millennials. Those are Generation Z kids that don't know shit and just like stay on their phone, walking down the street, yelling at clouds.
So with like the hype of this phrase, apparently the meme to merch cycle is jumping off.
Meme to merch?
Meme to merch.
Oh, I thought you said meme to merch because sometimes
niggas memes... Niggas shipping across the world?
No. Nah,
shipping containers?
Oh, no. Nah,
or getting clapped.
Yeah, memes could memes could get you merched. Shit. Shout out to fucking Popeye's chicken sandwich.
Oh, shit. Oh. Okay.
No, the memes to merch, right? Yeah.
So this like viral audio clip has like resulted in people selling T-shirts, as pictured in the plastic bag font, like this joint with the repeating red letters.
Ah, yes.
Selling trinkets. People are doing like, I guess, sexually fluid versions. But like, this is a rainbow flag. Okay, boomer pin, and all the different things. And it's weird that not only this whole thing is being monetized, but the snarkiness towards boomers from Zoomers actually has me on the boomer side for this one.
Oh, yeah?
Just because, like, y'all niggas don't know anything. Like,
shut up.
Shut up. And there's nothing to do with boomers being good or whatever. The idea is that the vast majority of people, and I say this as a generational inclusionist, are stupid. No matter what age you are. So I shout out to people making money off of this trend. Shout out to the way the world is starting to realize that it's not millennials. It's not us. It's not us. We're the brokers. We're the brokers. We're just trying to make everybody understand everybody else.
Okay.
But these techno children are like, speaking of YA novels, did you know anything about Twilight?
I know of it. Yes.
Okay. So there is a, this is getting into the lore of Twilight a bit.
I don't know the lore.
Don't ask me why I know.
I was going to respect your privacy.
But there is an issue where the vampires who are like cultured and shit and don't just bite everybody, they refuse to bite children.
Respectful.
Babies. Do you know why?
Because the baby blood is not, I don't know.
Because if you bite a baby, it'll have vampire powers and be mad strong, but it's still a baby. So his nigga's just wild. He just does baby shit.
Oh, he's a wild baby.
He's just with his powers and knowledge and all this shit.
Oh, shit.
And that is the seminal issue of our time with this current generation.
That they're vampire baby Zoomers?
Yeah. Vampire babies.
Man, that was deep.
They'll have too much power and they won't understand the essential tenet of Spider-Man chapter 3 verse 6, that with great power comes great responsibility. There is such a burden on the current age, and they know they're supposed to do something. They feel like this social pull. I'm glad that like they're moving left, but the bounds of the techno hell that I guess we have put on them, Mark Zuckerberg and the like,
yeah,
they don't understand how to operate in it.
We don't either, so we're just like,
but we're at least we're afraid of the shit. We're afraid of the shit. They're like, sure, have my face.
Well, because they were born into it. I was born into it.
So I mean, that's my greatest concern, because there's gonna be a point, maybe in 20 years or so, where we're sort of vying for the same cultural control, and I want us to like make sure that they don't build Skynet, that they don't, agree to let's just put chips in arms.
Coming to them.
It's my fear, and I'm not with it. This TikTok shit, y'all know this is China. That's China.
China.
That's China. Don't be on there. Don't be on there.
Watching Baby Shark.
Exactly.
You watch the shit backwards, it's propaganda.
I'm sure.
I don't know. I just made it up, but
sure. Taiwan rightfully belongs to the Chinese. Doop 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 doop. So that's my takeaway from this, I guess, debate between these two extremes, cultural extremes.
From this one abstraction from the daily culture wars.
Yeah, it's absurd that. Did I mention that the trademark has been put in by Fox Media to make some sort of program off of this?
Well, this is America. Somebody had to capitalize off this.
I'm sure they did, but it speaks to, I guess, and I'm sure it was a boomer that thought about this. We should make some money off of this. Why not? Make fun of me all day. Ha ha, I'm laughing to the bank.
Right.
It's frustrating that the younger generation, and it's alluded to in the article, they're just like, this is funny, haha. It's like, this stupid shit. I just want this stupid shit to end.
It's not going to end.
Streaming wars, generational wars. Can we just make sure we have healthcare and then not have to be, because this is the Trump shit. Like the people in the middle, the games and whatnot, if they're going to play the game back, the snarky trolling game, they're willing to just vote for anything. They're like, oh, these Zoomers think they're funny. Ha ha ha. We'll vote for Trump again. Like, what? Like, no, it's not equivalent. But they don't care. They don't understand trolls. And I think that trolling is becoming a lot more prevalent amongst younger people.
Yeah.
That trolling ideology, when it infects people that don't understand the stakes.
That you're being trolled.
That they're being trolled, the stakes, they will bite back and do the foolishness that we have now in our politics and government.
That was a good way to thread it together. I think that's
thread it. Thanks, DJ.
That's pretty apt.
I try.
The core of the organizing principle of trolling is a general nihilism, and that is affected everything down to our politics and institutions as a whole. So, it's never particularly helpful. But when you are particularly your given Zoomer and you find yourself in this circumstance as we are now with a melting planet and high costs for living and housing and college and healthcare, and just a weird right wing lurch of the country spurred on by these boomers and the older generations for the most part. I can see and understand the antipathy. I've read pieces before that the copy editor did not, make the title "Okay, Boomer," but I forgot that it was a Sean Endling piece in Vox a couple months back. Like, basically, the headline was literally like, I'm damn near paraphrasing, but it was like how boomers fucked us, basically.
Right.
And we're not going to go on about this, but essentially, what we're saying at its core is the baby boomer population were the progeny of what the greatest generation, right? All the GIs that came home after World War II. So that was when, marginalization of minorities aside, that was America and Americana, the culture itself, kind of at its zenith. Everybody was really feeling good. Obviously, so a lot of babies were made. A lot of people were wealthy. The GI Bill made a lot of people go to school. Everything was working. Culture wars continued on. Obviously, marginal groups, black people, wanted their say in the democracy. And there were particularly right-wing forces, money forces that wanted to go against big government, wanted to go against these institutions and how things were stacking up. So we've seen a gradual decay of where things stood, at least for the American populace from the 60s. And we've yet to see any real major developments or innovations in American society besides, I would say, the internet, social media, since then. And it's only been...
No social.
Right. No. Well, yeah, that's even better said. There's been no real social upheaval, no like massive countrywide social movement since then. Up until now, we're like the bleeding edge of like a real.
It's happening.
Yeah, it's happening. For real, like social change.
Shout out to white evil.
And the only things that we've seen is a lot of fucking backtracks and tragedy. We've seen a bunch of wars that have not worked. Vietnam to first Desert Storm worked, but wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and where things stand now and. As you said, like all this healthcare shit, and I'm putting my thumb on the scale, but like neoliberal economics,
it breeds nihilism.
So yeah, so when we see like shit is just not working, but we're all still kind of beaten down by the machine, and we still have to work every day, and we see all of these issues falling over each other in our news feeds that we're feeding right into our brains from these new social media services, it brings about a lot of nihilism and a lot of that anger at the people that have the most socioeconomic clout right now, right? And that are your boomers. Those are the people that are your CEOs and presidents and deans and, like people of the highest status because they've worked there, are at their, not at their bet, not at their peak work age. I forgot, wasn't that what's your peak like earning power, like in your
50s?
I don't know about the earning power, but it's like, yeah, like some I don't want to say the wrong thing, but essentially your most of your social clout does reach when you're like between your 50s and 60s. So they got all the juice right now and shit looks pretty fucked up. So if you're a Zoomer, you looking like, yeah, nah, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Okay, to you,
right?
And that's kind of the crux of it, and that's one of the many culture wars.
Did I talk about the conference? Was that on pod? I don't know if it was on pod.
No, I don't think so.
It doesn't matter if it was on pod. I went to a conference. It was a talk about diversity across the spectrum of society. And they have all these surveys that they did around the world. So you're getting data from a number of countries. And one of the questions they ask is, how do you feel about diversity? Is it a good or a bad thing? And the spread of answers, people who said it was a bad thing and a good thing, was that on the right, you had people who thought it's the worst thing ever. And on the left, you had people they called woke warriors. So, and then there was a 5-bucket spectrum. And the way it broke down, actually, was that the numbers of people who were against diversity or for it was the same across age groups. Because they're like, oh, younger people are going to be a little more open. And then they're like, oh, here's the 18 to 34 thing. And it was just exactly the same.
Oh, wow.
Which was kind of disheartening. But hopefully that sentiment means different things.
Yeah, I was about to say that doesn't necessarily mean any one thing.
They might have different policy actions that may be more left or more positive, regardless of whether or not they feel it's
positive. Yeah, I mean, I'm always more of a proponent of like economic progress compared to like fucking fighting the culture wars every day. Like, I don't, that's secondary. To me, at least. So I'm not that dismayed about a stat like that. Is it?
Okay, I'm just trying to make sure, make sure the young people are okay. That's the only thing I was worried about. They were pushing us forward, they're trolling and their cynicism about everything, but some of them are shitty too. That's all I want.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, nobody's expecting like shit to be, nobody's expecting for shit to be like perfect, not by any means. There's always going to be the various wings and personalities, because what you see for sure is that human nature never has changed. It really hasn't. Like, we really have not gotten better as a people. We just have kind of,
Just less.
I don't think so.
Just less wanted murder and shit. And
there are laws that
fair.
That
fair. Niggas got consequences.
Right. Yeah.
you can't just skip town.
Yeah. There are laws and there's fucking surveillance. Like, that's what you got. But that's not even really the conclusion I was trying to make. It was just in terms of like normal human interaction and actions and just very normal human selfishness and group dynamics. None of that shit has changed. It really hasn't changed at all. And I'm not, and that's not even really a bad thing, but you just have to understand that. So it was really just trying to build a reality around that and not expecting everybody to be like some super good person or everybody to act the same, because that's just not humanity anyway.
And at least the gradient of what that window of, I don't know, of good action provides for most populace will make it all relative. So even if 100 years ago we were all serfs and then 30 years from now we're all complaining about, not having 40 days off for work, at least we'll be moving forward. Right, boomers?
I don't know if we have any boomers in the audience, but feel free to email us or DM or whatever. I don't know.
Or snail mail. It's okay. We take phone calls.
We do. We do. I mean, yeah. I'm not a big fan of boomers either, but,
Could be worse. Well, it's been another great Sending Link, DJ.
I hope so.
Glad we got back in the parlor and chatted it up, man.
Hashed some things out. Yeah. It's holiday season, so it's just hard to
holiday
be. Holiday season. Yeah, so it's hard to for us to get up and coordinate as well as we'd like to.
We make it happen for y'all.
We try to make it happen. Still try to give more fire. So continue to be on the lookout.
All right.
Leave it at that.
Check back in with us. We'll see you later. Bye. Catch you later. See you later.
See you later. Bye. Hug a boomer.
Hug a zoomer.
Hug a zoomer.